inconceivable!
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough roads to get up to 88.
Roads? Well, we're going, we don't need roads.
Hello again, and welcome to the Good Trash Genre Cast, where we, the UCO Film Society, gather together somewhere in the Liberal Arts Building today. Once again, we have conquered space within the English department offices, and we are broadcasting to you all, talking about the movies you will never, ever look at in the course of taking a film studies class. Introductions begin the show, and my name is Dustin Sells. I am a grad student in the 20th and 21st Century Studies program. To my left, this dapper gentleman, please introduce yourself.
I am Arthur Gordon, and I am a student of the silver screen.
To my right,
I am Dalton Stewart, and I am still a sociology major here at the University of Central Oklahoma.
And we are gathered here to talk about the movie Brick. It's film noir in a high school.
It's neo-noir-vember.
What's going on? We're doing some noir-vember, neo, and otherwise. And so we're going to talk more about that, because maybe this is otherwise. But we will discuss that here in a few moments.
Okay.
Let's begin, as we always begin, with a synopsis of the film from the voice of the cinema. That is Mr. Arthur Gordon doing what only he can do. Arthur, dazzle us.
A teenage loner pushes his way into the underworld of a high school crime ring to investigate the disappearance of his ex-girlfriend.
Thank you, Mr. Arthur Gordon. Let's just do the quick thumbs up, thumbs down. What do we think about this movie? I begin to my right. Mr. Dalton Stewart, what did you think?
This is a thumbs up. I enjoy this movie quite a bit. Seen it several times now. I saw it very shortly after it came out. I think just shortly after it was released on DVD. I remember being really just kind of taken aback by the film. I hadn't seen anything like it. I had been exposed to noir before, but I hadn't this kind of mishmash of noir. I really enjoyed it quite a bit. And I was kind of in the target age group for this film. So I enjoyed it, and it still holds up, in my opinion, from my original viewing.
Thank you for that. Mr. Arthur Gordon, what'd you think?
You know, I watched this movie in early 2011, and I initially gave it a 9 out of 10.
Shazam!
And
this is on your website?
Yes, theroundtablereview.com.
Trademark.
There it is. And Dalton earlier brought up the point that I initially gave Equilibrium an 8 out of 10.
I did.
But upon giving this the second view, I think this stands up a lot better than Equilibrium did. And I'd say
that it stands up.
That's fair. No, that it's probably I still give this an 8 to 9 out of 10 probably. I think it's a very solid film. And it is a solid entry from a first-time filmmaker. So, and I love the Levitt.
Excellent. I tell you what, the Levitt is what carries the show.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Joseph Gordon does what needs to be done, channeling the spirit of Humphrey Bogart for this film. And I came in, this is a first-time view. I am the virgin viewer of this week's episode. And watching the movie, I expected something else. I expected 10 Things I Hated About You, which is where you take something like Taming of the Shrew, and you completely translate it to a contemporary high school type film. Mm-hmm. What I got instead was the entire script of a Dashiell Hammett adaptation with just the characters and the settings changed. And it took me a minute to get that all put together.
Less 10 Things I Hate About You, more Ethan Hawke's Hamlet.
Ethan Hawke's Hamlet, or Baz Luhrmann's Romeo plus Juliet.
Oh, well, I wasn't going to mention that because I don't speak of that film.
You don't? Well, I like the movie.
I haven't seen it in a long time, actually.
But
I like Johnny Legs in it.
Johnny Legs is in it. It's, you know, so I don't know what I think still.
Really?
I like the movie.
Okay.
I do like the movie, but I was thrown off. I was thrown off because it was kind of one of those Shakespeare adaptations where you have all the Elizabethan language, all that being brought into a completely different setting. I saw an adaptation of Macbeth not very long ago starring Patrick Stewart. Same sort of thing, moved into somewhere, maybe the Cold War? No. I'm not sure when it was. And it was still the exact same Elizabethan language being placed in this different context. So for me, my thoughts are, I like it, but I don't know. I don't know how I've got my mind made up.
You're still digesting?
I am. I shouldn't have watched it last night.
You're Dustin, your thoughts on it really do segue really well in my whole analysis of this
Let's
movie,
do some analysis in that case.
So that's why I wanted to bring it up. It really segues amazingly.
That's what I do. I segue.
You segued. The reason you are correct this film is a straight-up, hard-boiled detective film.
Mm-hmm.
No question. The reason that works, and I think the reason that Shakespeare's work is so transposable into other settings, is the universe and... Leave this in.
Adjectives.
The universality?
Universality?
Is that a word?
Universalism.
Mm-hmm. Universalism. Universal.
That's different.
Universality.
Universality.
I know.
What you want.
University.
The universality. Man, I've never used that word before.
I never will again.
Probably not. Of both Shakespeare's work, and I think to some extent noir, is what makes this work. This Brick is high school taken as seriously as the people in high school take it. High school's very, very dramatic and serious when you're there. When you get out and you get some, you know, some foresight and or hindsight from it, you realize there's not much to be spoken of. Actually, definitely foresight.
It is life and death, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very life and death. And I think that's... Yeah, I think that's... Thank you. I think that's why noir works so great in this setting. Because, as we kind of mentioned last week, noir is very much melodrama. Melodrama plus violence. Mm-hmm. And high school's... Everything is melodrama in high school. And I think that's part of why this works. I think it's part of why Shakespeare's plays work so well in other settings, is because his themes are so universal. You know, the existentialism of Hamlet, the political intrigue of, you know, works like Macbeth and Julius Caesar, these things transpose very well. And meanwhile, the fear of noir, of betrayal, the mystery, you know, all of these things that we love so much about noir, I think really translate well into a high school movie, which is part of what makes Brick so successful, I think. And not the least of which in its success being just how perfectly the dialogue captures noir dialogue. I mean, the dialogue in this movie is top-notch. It's probably the best feature in the film. That's the long and short of it, though. I mean, I think that's why this movie works so well.
Well, thank you for that analysis, Dalton Stewart. You're beginning to convince me, Arthur. The rest of the duty is left to you, sir. What do you think?
Duty.
Well, it's good that we're college students.
Well, some of us longer than others. Regardless, it was a shot at both of us, actually.
Not me. I'm in the clear.
No. Okay, let me see. I think... Man, first time I watched this movie, what stood out to me was the acting and the direction. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I loved Levitt. I love Levitt here. I initially said this movie was, let me see, it's gritty, it's dark, it's awesome. And it's one of the most interesting movies you've probably never heard of. I really praise this movie, and I think, for me, this movie, it's not the story. When I watched it the other night, I honestly can't recount the actual plot of the film. I know the death of the girlfriend, and then there's this little, you know, he's trying to solve a murder mystery and that stuff. But for me, it was the acting initially. And I love the portrayal. I love the performances that Rian Johnson got out of his actors. But the second time watching it, for me, it was the visual stuff. The showdown between him and the car in the parking lot.
Excellent.
That shot. I love that shot. And then the execution in the tunnel.
Yeah.
I love
that he really flexes a shoestring budget. I mean, he makes the dollar go a long way.
But it's the visual stuff here that he's doing that I really love and that really makes this movie for me, I think. And it's not so much the story. I'm not a big noir guy. I'm not as well-versed in it as Dustin and probably Dalton. So the story to me, I mean, it doesn't really capture my attention, the fact that it is probably a carbon copy of certain, you know, noir stories and movies, but overall it's just the technical aspects and the acting that draws me into this film. Both times that I've watched it, I was more mesmerized by what was going on in the mise-en-scene, and I was talking to another guy who likes this film, and he was talking about the van scene.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
And he's got the whole little setup in there, and the lamp and the chair and stuff, and it's just those aspects of the mise-en-scene and the way the visual story that's being told, and how that all goes together. It really makes this film pop.
All right, I'm sold, gang. I like this movie a lot. I mean, I really do. And I'm the target audience.
Now, did you need an affirmation?
Was it just us liking it, or what teetered you over the edge?
Well, I watched the movie, and I thought, man, this is great. And I thought, this is does that weird thing Shakespeare movies do. And it doesn't always work. Mm-hmm. And there were moments when I was taken out of the film because I believed so closely the high school story that when Joseph Gordon-Levitt starts talking about the Bulls being on him and the heat coming down in 1940s parlance,
yeah,
I was going, oh yeah, I'm watching a movie that's not really what this movie is. It's this complete...
He calls the stoners hashheads.
The hashheads, yeah, yeah. The fish out of water thing. He talks to the vice principal.
Yeah.
And
do you know who that vice principal was? Richard Roundtree. That was Shaft.
Was that Shaft?
That was Shaft. Which I actually didn't realize the first couple of times I saw this.
I thought I knew the face, but I didn't realize that's who it was.
I think it's an awesome nod to noir, to unconventional noir films, because Shaft was taking the Dashiell Hammett type character and putting it in a blaxploitation, which mm-hmm. was kind of a new genre. Shaft kind of pioneered that. So anyway, that was something I thought was interesting.
But yeah, it was visually brilliant, and it was also the way the dialogue was delivered by the performances is what made it believable, because in the end, the film itself is a complete larceny of several typical noir film plot lines.
Well, I think, again, that what I was talking about, how universal those archetypes of noir characters and the archetypes of your typical high school film are very transposable. You know, you've got the smart villain, the tough villain, your femme fatale, your nice girl, your brainy guy. I mean, all these things exist in both noir films and high school films. And I think that's part of why it was so easy for them to larcen, if you want to use that terminology, Dustin.
Well, I mean, it was robbery of different bits. It really was. I mean, he had stolen these bits out of other plot lines. And I remember watching, going, oh, that's Maltese Falcon. That's Big Sleep. That's Chinatown. That's The Long Goodbye. And I'm just watching the film progress. I go, okay, that bit's from that. That bit's from that. And I saw the scenes, I guess, as I watched mm-hmm. it. And so I wasn't sure if I was sold on it because I did indeed see the scenes. But as I think about it more, I think that makes me love it more. Because it is absolutely this love letter to the greatest genre in film. And
agreed.
And you need to get out there and watch lots and lots of film noir. Analysis-wise, what I bring to it, I guess, is just this idea of the transposition of character and of trope and convention to different settings, to different plot lines, to different just overall visual aesthetics. And noir proves itself to be one of the most durable forms.
Very flexible.
Flexible, malleable forms for this sort of adaptation. And, you know, you can see noir in lots of stuff. I mean, there is noir in The Matrix.
Absolutely.
Trinity is a femme fatale. Absolutely. That dubious femme fatale throughout the first sections of the film. And Neo is that investigative mm-hmm. gumshoe character. And it begins to change and alter over time. It's a science fiction film, obviously. And that's just an example I just bring to the table to say that noir has this immense influence in film overall, and it is something, if you're going to be a film nerd, if you strive to know some things about movies, film noir is something you're going to have to add to your vocabulary.
And that's something to Brick's credit, because the first time I had a very limited exposure to film noir. Most of my experiences were the neo-noir things, like Blade Runner, Sin City, things very heavily influenced by noir film. Mm-hmm. The first time I saw Brick, and that was part of why I latched onto it so hard. And the same with you. When I revisited this film, I had more of a awareness of the history of film noir. So when I went back and I revisited Brick, actually probably just a few months ago, I had a much more appreciation for seeing those threads, those familiar tropes that I was already aware of, and were even more clear to me upon going back to it. I totally agree with you.
I think it rewards you. I think second viewings will reward you. I mm-hmm. think third viewings will reward you.
It's as is often helpful with a convoluted noir plot.
Right. And I don't know the plot's the point. I mean, the convoluted nature of it is part of that whole putting you in the same headspace. We talked about this last week.
Well, Memento,
Memento is that you're putting in yourself the same headspace as the investigator. He doesn't know, therefore you don't know. And so you are solving these things alongside Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And so you're experiencing, to a large extent, his experience. And you're also standing in awe of his brilliance.
He's a good actor. He really is.
Well, his brilliance as an actor, but also his character's brilliance as a detective. His understanding of these complex webs of political alliance that happen in high school that also tend to happen in film noir. Mm-hmm. And that is, of itself, a beautiful, wonderful thing. Yeah, I like the movie. I like it quite a bit. Excellent. So I guess we need to do this now. We can like a movie, may not want to put it on the shelf. We may indeed want to go ahead and say it's still trash and it's disposable. It is on the flicks of nets. So I have to ask the question, honestly asking the question, do we put this film on the shelf or in the trash? And furthermore, what else would you watch if you put it on the shelf, or what instead should you watch? Should you trash it? Dalton Stewart, I ask you.
It's going on the shelf for a couple of reasons. First of all, I think Rian Johnson is a filmmaker to watch. Between this, his film The Brothers Bloom, a couple of very good episodes of the television series Breaking Bad, and this year's film Looper, he is definitely a filmmaker to keep our eyes on. He's just, time and again, shows he's extremely talented. It's funny, Arthur called it in his original review the most interesting film you've probably never seen, because the podcast Film Spotting has an annual award they call the Golden Brick, basically to the film you probably didn't hear about this year that you really need to see, and it is its namesake is this film, Brick. This is the first film they gave this tip of the hat to. Mm-hmm. So I think it's, you know, it's got much more of a cult following now than it did when it was released in 2005. It's just a great film. You guys really should see it and add it to your collection. If you like this film, I recommend you check out a film from a few years later, 2008-2009, called The Assassination of a High School President. It's basically Brick if Brick was a comedy. It takes a lot of these, again, the gumshoe-type character, transposes them into high school and the interweaving plots of that, but it's much more comedic film. Bruce Willis appears as the high school principal in that film. There are a lot of up-and-coming actors whose names are escaping me at the moment, but definitely a funny and interesting film. So if you like Brick, definitely check out The Assassination of a High School President.
Arthur Gordon.
I think I'm gonna put it on the shelf and pretty much echo Dalton's sentiments. I think Rian Johnson is going to be a key figure in cinema in the next few years, especially with the critical success of Looper. And you can already see it in Brick, and he's doing things, even with, you know, a limited budget, that are very impressive and awe-inspiring, perhaps. I like what he does. So I'm just going to kind of echo Dalton and say, you know, things to watch, kind of along those same lines. I'm going to say Looper. I think everybody needs to go see Looper. I think it's a really good movie, really solid movie. And I'm also going to say Blade Runner. I didn't see Blade Runner until this year. And so, you know, people who have maybe avoided that film, go pick up the director's cut and watch it.
I'm going to go ahead and say I'm going to put it on the shelf as well. I think the movie is worth watching, not for directorial purposes so much for me, as I'm getting less and less interested in following just the work of one particular director over time, just for generic purposes, just because it is a real addition to the genre of film noir. And what's interesting about what's going on generically here with film noir is that there are the neo-noirs, which are outside of the 1940s, told noir-style color films that we see today, sometimes told black and white, but usually they're told color. Then there's a thing called the retro noir, which is something like L.A. Confidential.
Which is a neo-noir, or Chinatown.
Chinatown, same thing. It's obviously much later than the 40s, made in the 70s for the case of Chinatown, or in the early 90s, as is the case for L.A. Confidential. But the films are told back in the 40s with all that straight noir tropes and conventions. This film does something altogether different by completely time warping the script into the future and applying it to a high school film. I just think that's really valuable. So I'm definitely wanting to put it on the shelf. What I would say you'd watch else, I would echo Arthur Gordon's sentiments and say Blade Runner is a movie else to see alongside this. And then I'm going to go ahead and go back into good old film noir territory and say you got to see The Big Sleep. You must see The Big Sleep, because it is one of those films upon which many other films are based, including another big film, The Big Lebowski, which we're going to get to take a look at next week. And so I think a fun double, triple bill might be The Big Sleep, The Big Lebowski, and Brick all alongside one another. So that's my recommendation for that. Let's move on to the next part of our show.
Okay, which is rocking right along.
Which is listener feedback. Do we got any of that we want to share this week, Arthur Gordon?
Yes, we got some stuff from the Facebook. The first is a response. We asked 3 different questions last time.
Yes, lots of questions.
We asked favorite nonlinear film, non-Tarantino. We asked Tarantino versus Nolan. And we asked fast versus slow zombies. And so Nathan W. responded. He said Memento would be his favorite nonlinear film. Tarantino in the Battle Royale.
The Battle Royale!
And he's going to say slow zombies. Fast zombies mean you're doing it wrong. That being said, he's still going to watch World War Z.
He's right.
So those are Nathan's responses to our questions last week. And then I threw out a question just, you know, get people talking. What films, did you see anything this weekend, old or new? Nathan responded that he said Immortals. He was not impressed, but entertaining fight scenes. And then another gentleman, Adam C., he finally watched 28 Days Later. Up on my recommendation.
Have you any feedback to share, Mr. Dalton Stewart?
Due to the very quick turnover, due to the holiday, we had...
There's a holiday coming up.
We are recording early.
In which birds are consumed.
There will be consumption.
And some pigs.
And pigs. Birds and pigs.
Some households.
And berries from Cran.
We did have a note from at Brad Brick, Brad Brickle. He wanted to thank us for the shout-out.
It's Brick L.
Brick L. Yeah. Sorry, Brad. He thanks us for the shout-out last week, so that was we are more than happy to give people shout-outs who like the show. We did have a couple of notes from Shane Arrington, at Shane Korn with a K1 on Twitter. He mentioned a couple of things. He said he'd be interested on our takes on the Mario Bravo films that are on Netflix, Black Sabbath and The Evil Eye.
I will speak to Black Sabbath as I know it better, and it's beautiful. The lighting is brilliant. Boris Karloff is creepy. The movies themselves are just fun and gothic and stylistically just very, very interesting. I would recommend seeing Black Sabbath every day. It's like...
All of the time.
It's like Snickers bars left over from Halloween that you just go by and you just grab one as you go by. To go by and as you're just... You've got a little time. I'm going to watch one of the shorts out of this movie and pause it and have the Netflix resume work for me for later. That's the kind of thing I would say about Black Sabbath. Well, it's lots of fun.
It's both of those, just knowing the reputation, are definitely kind of too good, quote, too good for us. But I knew Dustin, being a fan of older horror films, would probably have an opinion. So he also did want to mention we are Debbie Downers about Star Wars. He says he saw the Star Wars original release and cannot get enough except for Phantom Menace. So apparently he likes Clone Wars and or Attack of the Clones.
Attack of the Clones.
Two. And I would Shane, I'm inclined Sith? To Revenge of the Sith. Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you, Shane. I actually like Revenge of the Sith quite a bit. I don't think it stacks up with the Holy Trilogy, but it's pretty damn good. Now, as far as Attack of the Clones go, it's been a while since I revisited that, if you want to call it a film, but I don't recall enjoying it too much the last time I watched it.
I want to say, for me, Revenge of the Sith was the most watchable of those three.
Absolutely.
And probably most prone to multiple viewings.
Absolutely.
And then probably episode one after that, and two, I probably have no...
If you had fleshed out the story of Revenge of the Sith into three films, that'd have been a decent prequel trilogy.
Yeah.
I will throw out something, not really a dissenting opinion, but a personal anecdote that redeems Attack of the Clones.
Lay it on me.
In that I saw the film in a large, kind of, think the Grand Auditorium at the Warren Theater in Moore, Oklahoma. Think one of those really, really big movie palace style cinemas.
Okay.
I'd seen it the third week, I think, that it was out, because I had waited till midnight to see episode one. And my heart had been broken. And so my enthusiasm had
been shattered.
A lot of cold water thrown upon it. But I went and finally saw it with the wife. Mm-hmm. And we went and saw it in the afternoon. And it was a packed house.
Pretty cool.
To see episode two. And it was full of all the nerds who love Star Wars so much. This was the second and third time that they had seen this movie, apparently. Because as Yoda begins to make his way down that hallway and to fight Count Dooku, everybody knows what's going on. And the entire theater erupted like we were watching a football game just when Yoda starts coming in. And it, and it built as a swell. And when he does the crazy force thing that zapped his lightsaber into his hand, there are rounds of applause, people standing on their feet, hoots and hollers, and Yoda does what Yoda must. And it was absolutely the most fun I have ever had in a movie theater, ever.
Good story.
Episode 2, Attack of the Clones. And for that reason, it continues to hold a special place in my heart, though Hayden Christensen's performance is nearly unwatchable.
That was bad. And I will say, in that film's defense, I would have been about 12 upon theatrical release of that film. And when Yoda comes out and lays it down, my little 12-year-old brain fell out of my little 12-year-old ass. It was pretty cool. So to people who say these films are for children, I think there is some credence to that argument. So Shane did have one last piece of feedback.
Let's hear it.
He wanted to give us, he said, mentioning our discussion of great years in film, he said 1995 is his favorite year in film. And I made the same face, and I said, example. Show me your list.
I made a face, listeners.
Heat, Seven, Braveheart, Usual Suspects, and Casino. Loves all those films. I say, Shane, okay.
Well played, sir.
Well done. And that's all the feedback we got on the Twitter this week, except for a few fun links and news articles. But as far as show feedback, that's what we've got.
Excellent, excellent. Listener, dear listener, we love the feedback.
A lot.
By all means, feed us back, because we're starving.
We need your validation.
We are. We'll never make it without you. So thank you so much for the listening. Let's move on to our game. The film brick is what I would call, we're going to call this game, Film Out of Water, as a fish is out of water. And so we're going to talk about our favorite film out of water and why.
Now, Dustin, I had a hard time explaining what you meant by this. So maybe give the listener a little bit more.
It's tricky.
It is tricky. I had to think about this.
It's a slippery eel.
Well, yeah. they're
because it's not you specifically said it's not a genre mashup.
Correct.
That was part of your criteria for this, and I said, okay, well, give me something. So tell the listener more what you mean.
Well, the first thing I thought about was what I anticipated would happen with Brick. That Brick would be 10 Things I Hate About You, which is the Taming of the Shrew. Completely pulled out of its own water, its own Elizabethan trappings, and thrust into another setting. It is a different place in the taxonomy of the film Out of Water, because now what we have is we have the artifact script being translated from a point in time to another point in time and or setting, i.e. Ethan Hawke's Hamlet versus 10 Things I Hate About You. Shakespeare seems to come up a lot in this bit of conversation. But other films do this, and I didn't want to say too much to color your answers regarding all of that. But that's what we mean by the film out of water, is that it is not where it belongs, but it is actually somewhere else, either in setting, time, character, or place. Dalton Stewart, I ask you, favorite film out of water?
I thought on this for a whole long time.
Not that long, because we turned around too fast.
We did. And I was thinking Alien, and I said, no, not quite. Almost not quite. Alien is a slasher film in space. That's not, it's a sci-fi horror film. Probably the first of its kind, to my knowledge. You can maybe make the argument that 2001 A Space Odyssey is a horror film, or has some notes of that. I thought on it a little bit more, and I came up with Predator.
Okay.
Because Predator is an 80s action flick, but it's also a sci-fi film. But it's also a horror film. There's a lot going on in that movie. And for probably the first 20, 30, 40 minutes of this film, it's basically every other Arnold Schwarzenegger film from the 80s. And then randomly, an invisible alien starts murdering Carl Weathers. And you're like, whoa, this is a film I wish I could go back in time and watch and know nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
Another film that came to mind was From Dusk Till Dawn. From Robert Rodriguez. Actually, I say came to mind. I mean, literally just now. I just thought of it for some reason. A very fun film.
That's a neo-noir halfway
through. A neo-noir halfway through. And then over an hour into the film, vampires show up and start murdering people. So these are two, I think, very jarring examples of what you're talking about. I think they both work very well in terms of taking things we're familiar with, like the criminals on the run or the crack squad of commandos, and then throwing them after something that normally has a very easy time killing its prey in films. Usually vampires and superpowered aliens are, you know, make quick work of our heroes. And in this case, they're put up against something a little bit more substantial in terms of challenge. I think very interesting stuff from both those, both very fun films. And good examples, I think, of what we're talking about when we say film out of water.
Excellent choice, sir. Arthur, what say you? Favorite film out of water?
You can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm going to say the Dark Knight trilogy.
Boom! Explain.
I think these are, on the general consensus, these are going to be action movies or they're superhero movies.
Mm-hmm.
But what Nolan did with these three films is he told, I think, three different style of genres. Batman Begins is a psychological drama or a thriller. And, you know, most people who go through the things that Bruce Wayne goes through would turn to alcoholism or drug abuse. And Bruce Wayne becomes a crime fighter.
It depicts a descent into a cape.
Mm-hmm.
And a descent into madness.
Mm-hmm. And the Dark Knight, you know, exceeds the superhero genre. It's a crime movie. It's Heat, yeah. And it's, you know, all these.
It's the French Connection.
No.
Yeah.
And so I think, in doing that, Nolan has done something for the superhero genre, because, you know, we start to get tired of these movies. You know, everything is just a money grab for Hollywood. But when you put a guy like Nolan in there, who loves the cinema, I think you can honestly see that through his work, that he loves cinema, and he pays homage with every film he does, that it allows for these movies to become something more than just another action, mindless blockbuster. And so, for me personally, I think the Dark Knight trilogy salvages the comic book genre by, you know, kind of transposing these other genres into that to make them more meaningful. One other movie I'd like to mention is I Love You Man, Paul Rudd and Jason Segel, which takes that romantic comedy, those tropes and those characters, and transposes them to a buddy comedy. And you get those same dynamics. You got the initial meet and the budding romance, and then the artificial breakup. And then finally, the restoration by the end of the film. And so I think that's just another interesting way to see that play out.
It's a really good choice.
That's an excellent film out of water.
I definitely just want to say, Arthur, I love you, Tico Brohe.
And there was one other movie, and I'm going to say Rango.
And I
think a lot of people consider animation a genre. You know, it's a cartoon.
It's a for style, a lot of people. But okay, yeah, I got
but for
you.
A lot of people, I get what you're saying. I'm tracking. We don't expect to see a spaghetti western.
Yeah. But that's what this movie is. It is purely Western. And I think that threw a lot of people when it initially came out because they weren't expecting what they got. But I think Rango does a lot with the Western genre in the guise of a children's movie.
Excellent choice, sir. The first thing I would begin with is I would, again, advocate a little bit of the world cinema and talk about a movie called Ran. Again, Akira Kurosawa, who is my daddy. What can I say?
2 weeks
but,
in a row.
But it's King Lear translated into Japanese. Already we have a fish out of water.
Yeah.
And not only is it translated into Japanese, but it's translated into feudal Japan. The daughters are now sons, and it is all about samurai. And it is wonderful. Wonderful.
You keep telling me this.
You need to see this movie. I like it a whole lot.
I've heard a lot of good things about this film. Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to name the fish out of water to end them all. And I'm going to say Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, is a Western in space. Absolutely. A Western in space. Han Solo is a gunslinger. There's a bar scene. There is all of this trade routes and the Pony Express and all of that good stuff. Stagecoach lines and smuggling. All of those things are translated very, very easily in my mind to a Civil War era Western film. And I see you making a face.
The face I'm making is twofold. One, I really feel like it shares too much of that space opera, the Flash Gordon type mm-hmm. thing. But then as soon as you said Western space, I was really mad at myself for not taking the chance to talk about Firefly and Serenity, which I think is, I'm even clearer, like it is very Western. It's not kind of a Western like mm-hmm. Star Wars and some. It is straight up a Western.
Certainly, and I probably would have said it except for the criteria was favorite. And I prefer episode 4 to Serenity. But yes, I think it is clearer in that way. Furthermore, Star Wars is greatly based on an Akira Kurosawa samurai film called The Hidden Fortress. And so that fish is coming out of water over here. If you watch The Hidden Fortress and you think the two idiot guys that are in that and just think R2-D2 and C-3PO, and then think of that little bit of spoilerific stuff we find in episode 1 where there's a body double for the princess, just think about those two things in episode 4 and you will have seen the same movie.
So what you're telling me is you don't like Star Wars New Hope more than you like Serenity. You just wanted to talk about Akira Kurosawa some more.
No. I do like it more than I do like Serenity. I like Serenity a lot. I mean, I don't dislike Serenity, but it's episode 4. It's Star Wars. It's part of my childhood, and I just, you know, in that aesthetic, taste-driven bit of stuff, I have to say I like episode 4 better. But I would want to ask the dear listener out there.
Dear listener.
Do you prefer episode 4 to Serenity? If you had popcorn and the wife / girlfriend / significant other on the couch beside you.
That's a loaded question.
What would you pick?
This question is bothersome to me. Because it's loaded.
Okay.
Because, hands down, A New Hope is a far more influential film. Without A New Hope, we don't have Firefly and Serenity.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously. I mean, it goes without saying. Without Han Solo, we don't have Captain Reynolds. Because Captain Reynolds is
Han Solo.
A son of Han Solo.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, Serenity is a much better acted film. Hands down, a better acted film. Don't look at me like that.
That's probably fair, without seeing Serenity.
Have you seen Firefly, though?
An episode or two.
And you can probably say it's a better...
Well, I'm never going to vouch that the acting in episode 4 is good.
It's not.
Except well, it's Douglas Fairbanks.
Except for maybe Han Solo and Sir Alec Guinness. That being said, it's also a better written film in terms of character depth and dialogue. And I'd say the direction's probably a little flashier, too.
Does character depth stand alone without the series?
Yes, I think
it does. I think
it's hard for me to say that because I saw the series before seeing Serenity, so it's hard for me to pull myself out, but I think it stands alone as a film very well.
Okay.
Whereas, I don't think Star Wars stands alone. I think without the masterpiece that is Empire Strikes Back, to elevate A New Hope is only slightly better than Return of the Jedi.
I would have to say, if I were to make a list, and I were listing a list of favorite films, and whatever that criteria of that list would be, in which that list would end up including both New Hope and Serenity.
I'm glad to hear that.
I'm not quite sure how that list would be asked of me, but if I were to make said list would have New Hope ranked above Serenity.
Okay.
And that's all I can say.
Fair enough.
Regarding that. And that is the question I wish to pose to the dear
listener. I just think it's a loaded question, that's all.
Well, I think you might be surprised at the diversity of opinion.
Dear listener, it wouldn't be an episode of GTGC if me and Dustin didn't get into it over some inane detail.
That's fair.
That is totally fair. Because I can't be called out and let it go.
I can't either.
While we're still on this fish out of water thing.
Yes.
How do you see the mockumentary?
I think it's maybe a stylistic choice.
Well, I mean, it's a documentary that's turned into a comedy. It is a comedy transposed to a documentary. This is Spinal Tap.
What, Best in Show?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we've seen it more on TV.
For your consideration, yeah, on
endlessly
TV.
Quotable stuff and
some
wonderful
great,
stuff.
Some great stuff. Some
Christopher Guest, we love you.
You're great. The Office, both UK and US, Parks and Recreation, all
Arrested
these are,
Development. Kind
Arrested
of
Development, definitely. Oh gosh, I'm blanking. There are others, examples that I like quite a bit. So.
And so we obviously like lots and lots of mockumentaries, but are they fish out of water? Fishes?
I think it's too broad. I don't think so. I think it's a stylistic choice, much like maybe animation to some extent, because animation is obviously not always for children.
Yeah.
I think it's a stylistic choice, more than a genre in and of itself.
I think I would go ahead and argue for genre for the mockumentary.
Would you argue it's a fish out of water, though?
I would not argue it's a fish out
okay.
of water. I would probably further argue that it is, in fact, a genre. That there
okay.
are tropes and there are conventions and certain expectations that must be fulfilled. It's a newer genre. And the original film itself might have been that. I'm going to say the original film is This Is Spinal Tap.
I'm definitely not an expert, but I think I'm inclined.
I think it's a fair starting point.
And yeah. I would argue for This Is Spinal Tap to be the Rock film out of water as a comedy. But then what follows
the band documentary. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And those later film that follow those conventions become a genre unto themselves over time. And I think now we know what a Christopher Guest film is, but it's not just Christopher Guest doing this stuff. It is Arrested Development. It is The Office, UK and US.
Dear listener, tell us what you think. That's a fair, good question, Arthur. I hadn't thought about that at all.
Okay.
Had you considered that before the podcast? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that.
Well, dear listener, we want to say to you, there are ways that you can actually answer these questions. There are ways that you can put these questions forward, and those are on social media, and wait till the end of the show so that you get a chance to hear those methods of connection to us. But let's talk about what we always talk about first, which is what's got us fired up this week in pop culture. Dalton Stewart, are you fired up?
Meh. Yeah, it's been a slow couple. I think it's rough. I don't know if it's the time of year because everything we're normally fired up about is actually happening right now, or because we are also, as we might have mentioned once or twice on these episodes of this wonderful podcast, we record from the University of Central Oklahoma, where we're all enrolled, and it's creeping up on finals, so we're all a little preoccupied at this moment. I do have some things. This weekend is the wide release of The Silver Linings Playbook, directed by David Russell. Starring Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence. I was almost going to call her that one girl from that I find attractive from that movie I don't like. The Hunger Games is that movie I don't like. I think it looks good. I think it looks heartwarming, funny, depressing, all things I enjoy. I do want to mention also...
Heartwarming and depressing.
I'm in that same vein, I think.
Yeah.
Well, and again, I guess to cancel out things I said earlier about directors and whatnot, as I've kind of canceled it out to an extent with Akira Kurosawa, David O. Russell of Three Kings fame is one of those directors who I just think is pretty impressive. I Heart Huckabees.
Oh, yeah. Dude's got some good movies.
Huckabee's good.
The only existential comedy that I can think of. Good movies, anyway, from Mr. O. Russell. O. Russell. I also
Mr.
do want to give. I
mentioned, Mr. Downey Jr. Mr. Downey Jr.
a few weeks ago, I mentioned there was an impending full length trailer for the game Grand Theft Auto V. That trailer has been released. It's very cool. There's also a full length cover story in this month's Game Informer about Grand Theft Auto V. I read it last night. Gonna be cool stuff. Gonna very much do what Rockstar always does. And reinvent and innovate in video gaming, and that's all I've got to say about that because this is not a podcast. Finally, I do want to mention that a character from the comics The Walking Dead has been cast for the television series The Walking Dead, his character being Tyrese. He was a great character in the comics. He was omitted from the show, which is something myself and other fans didn't like for a couple of reasons. One being he's a huge character in the comics, very important. A very interesting character, and also a very black character, which is something I think The Walking Dead is lacking. It's a very monochromatic TV show for the most part. Tyrese has been cast and will be played by Chad Coleman, famous for playing Dennis Cuddy Wise on The Wire. So The Wire and The Walking Dead, two things I like a lot. That's something that's got me pretty fired up.
Arthur Gordon, are you fired up this week in pop culture?
You know, I was worried for a bit. I wasn't fired up last week. I didn't think I was going to be this week.
Double disappointment?
Yeah. You know, minimally, a couple of DVD releases to look forward to. On 11/27, we'll be seeing Paranorman.
Ooh,
hit DVD. And this is one I want to check out, so I'm excited about that. And also Men in Black 3. I love the first Men in Black. Men in Black 2 sucked. Men in Black 3 redeemed the franchise for me.
Wow.
And if for nothing else, you see it for Josh Brolin's portrayal of a young Tommy Lee Jones.
His impeccable Tommy Lee Jones impression.
It's pretty awesome. And then on 12/4, Beasts of the Southern Wild, which got rave reviews, is one I want to check out.
Definitely.
And
yes,
one of the best movies of the year, Dark Knight Rises, hits. And so that's bold definitely
statement, bold statement. I will agree.
Definitely worth checking out.
That's a film that I found problematic, but am very quick to defend against naysayers. And there are a lot of sayers of nay against that film.
I do not say nay.
No.
I say yay.
Move.
Because it's awesome.
A couple of other things. American Horror Story Season 1 just went streaming on Netflix.
Oh.
This is something I'm excited about. This is something I've been wanting to check out. And so I will definitely be looking into that. The other thing is... there's been a trailer released, I haven't got to watch it though, for the Netflix original series House of Cards.
Yes.
I think produced and the first couple episodes directed by Mr. David Fincher and starring Kevin Spacey. This is a political thriller. It's going to be a 13 episode show, I believe. It's one of the original programming of Netflix, and this is something that is probably going to be worth checking out. I was kind of worried. I was looking at it on IMDb, and I guess Joel Schumacher will also be directing a few episodes. But you know what? I'm not going to pass judgment. I'm going to wait and see.
Have I mentioned how much I like David Fincher on this podcast?
On this podcast?
On this podcast?
I think it's come up.
Maybe in the 99 episode when I wasn't here.
No, you weren't here. That's right.
But I don't know about before that.
You didn't listen?
I did listen to it. I know he talked about Fincher. But, I mean, before that, has it really come up?
Well... in case it hasn't come up to your listener.
You're a Fincher fan.
I'm a big fan of David Fincher. I've been looking forward to House of Cards quite a bit.
I'm actually fired up about Twilight this week.
Really?
Having not seen any part of the series since the first film, but Mark Kermode of the Kermode Show with Simon Mayo on BBC podcast has written an article that was in The Guardian about why Twilight is better than Star Wars. Listener, I direct you to check out the link.
What?
Yeah, can we post a link in the show notes so I can read that?
I certainly will do
so. So I can rain upon him with fire?
And the statement is merely presented without commentary, because that's I am true. Curious, dear listener.
I want to hear what he has to say in defense of that statement.
You would have to say about that. The other thing I am fired up about this week in pop culture, which I am somewhat surprised that both of my co-hosts tonight have neglected to acknowledge the most significant event happening this week in popular culture, and that is Thursday, Thanksgiving, football, bazillions of calories, Macy's Day Parade, and all of this stuff happening.
And that dog show!
There is a dog show.
I watched the dog show.
I'm excited about Thanksgiving. I'm excited about 6 million guilt-free calories. I'm excited about watching a whole lot of football. And I'm excited about a new family tradition that's going to begin when we get back home. And we're going to look at the Godfather movies. Because nothing says family like the Godfather. Well, thanks, guys. I think there's a lot to be fired up this week in pop culture. I enjoyed hearing all of those bits and pieces and being able to discuss together what's got us fired up. Let's talk about how we can be followed and or fed back via social media. First of all, beginning with the Facey Facebook, Arthur Gordon.
You can find us on facebook.com/goodtrashgenrecast, one word.
Thank you for the radio voice, Mr. Dalton Stewart. How can we be followed on that other medium of social media that people seem to know about?
You mean the Twitter?
That would be it.
We can be found on the Twitter @good_trash.
And finally, we can all be followed on Tumblr http://goodtrashgenrecast.tumblr.com. Also, individually, we can all be followed on Twitter. I am able to be followed @Dustin_Sells, S-E-L-L-S. Arthur Gordon is able to be followed @RNDTBL Review. And Dalton Stewart is able to be followed @Dalton Stewart, S-T-U-A-R-T. And we would love to have the conversation continue. Now, next week, we're going to look at a movie called The Big Lebowski. And let me tell you, the dude abides. So, dear listener, get a chance to look at that ahead of time if you want to know what we're looking at. But get out there and look at some good trash, because there's a lot of good trash out there to be seen. And keep the conversation going, because that's what makes the movies fun. We'll see you next time.